Welcome to Local Talk concerning our COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through digital technology and word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your host for this hour with Anna Banana Magnuson, with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI, because we are the heart of Iowa. Anna?
Yes, hello everyone. It's Friday.
Well, we've got a full show of news and information for everyone today. Mario Cawthon, an Ames leader in community activism, will be here. And later, Susan Guiasta with Aaron Rossiker, communications specialist with Iowa State University's Office of Strategic Relations and Communication, will join us. But first, community radio is a place where all voices are welcome, a place where diversity is celebrated. It's a platform for discussion, a source of information, and a place to make connections. With your help, we can continue to be an important resource for news, ideas, conversation, and music. So be a part of our community and join KHOI with your donation today at our website, khoifm.org. Hey, the weather appears sunny to partly cloudy today with a high near 50. Winds will be light and a warming trend continues tomorrow with 58 degrees, light breezes that are forecast. And hang on, highs in the 60s next week. I don't want to jinx the possibility of post-election Indian summer weather. Yeah, we've had our freezes and snow. Let's welcome some Iowa warmth. One more time. If it's not asking too much, just one more time. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, a master at gathering the news this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
Just as it has for so many weeks and months now, the coronavirus dominated the news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday, when the Trib reported that 28 more cases of the virus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 3,906 since the pandemic began. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 6.4%. There was also word that in their first and only televised debate, Republican Randy Feenstra and Democrat J.D. Scholten had both pledged to stand up for farmers in Iowa's 4th Congressional District. The two are running against each other in the upcoming November general election. During the debate, Feenstra accused Scholten of supporting the Green New Deal, a Democratic proposal that Scholten has repeatedly said he opposes, while Scholten accused Feenstra of taking money from agricultural monopolies and pharmaceutical companies. There was also a story last Friday that Ryman Gardens had again enlisted the help of volunteers to carve pumpkins for its annual Spirits in the Garden celebration. Volunteers from Iowa State University and from the community had carved jack-o'-lanterns. This year, those volunteers carved while using face coverings and practicing social distancing. The Spirits in the Garden event was held last weekend and will take place again tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at Ryman Gardens. Saturday's Trib reported that another 19 coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 3,925. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 6.2%. There was also word that the Ames School Board had voted to move students in pre-K through second grade from a hybrid learning model to a full on-site teaching model starting November 9th. Families will still have the option to choose a fully online teaching model for their children. Third through fifth graders are scheduled to start fully on-site learning November 23rd, but District Superintendent Jenny Reisner said she would talk about that with school principals. The vote came after Reisner had told board members the current hybrid model was, in her words, not working for all of our learners. School board members discussed the proposed changes for more than 3 hours. Two of them, Jeanette Colton and Sabrina Shields Cook, voted against changing the hybrid plan. There was also word last Saturday that a Gilbert High School teacher had received a national award as a result of her dedication to students and her craft. Tracy Tenson, a 12th grade English teacher at Gilbert, became the second Iowan in 20 years to receive the High School Teacher of Excellence Award from the National Council of Teachers of English. It's the highest national recognition for English teachers. She's been at Gilbert 8 years, and she said the district allows her to be creative and encourages her to try new things. She said being with her students makes her feel really happy. And there was word that a popular Ames bar and restaurant was expanding again, this time to Des Moines. Whiskey River has opened a new place on Ingersoll Avenue in Des Moines. The chain was launched in Ames 10 years ago and expanded to Ankeny in 2016. Sunday's Trib reported that voters had braved near-freezing temperatures last Saturday as they waited in line to cast their ballots early at the Ames Public Library. Another satellite voting chance will come tomorrow, Saturday, from 9 to 4 p.m. at the library. The general election is this coming Tuesday, November 3rd. There was also word that researchers at several sites, including Iowa State University, have discovered that skin samples could be the key to an early Parkinson's disease diagnosis. Right now, Parkinson's cannot be definitively diagnosed until an autopsy. But researchers have found that protein clumping found in the brain of Parkinson's patients can also be found in the skin. Since Parkinson's is a progressive neurological disease that has no cure, doctors can only offer therapies to slow down its progression. That increases the importance of early and accurate diagnoses. There was also word that three Story County women had been recognized by the Iowa Restaurant Association. Candy Coulter, the owner of Simply Maize in Story City, Jenny Oaks, the owner of Sweet Oaks Bake Shop in Collins, and Susan France, the owner of the Fence Line Beer Lab in Huxley, have been named to the Restaurant Association's 40 Women to Watch in Hospitality list. That list showcases women in Iowa's hospitality industry who, in the association's words, are blazing new trails and leading by example. The women will be honored at an event in Des Moines next month. And Sunday's paper also had word about Iowa State University's football game against Oklahoma State University last Saturday. The game did not go well for the Cyclones. Oklahoma State beat ISU 24-21. Tuesday's Trib reported that 65 more coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 3,990. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 6.8%. Meanwhile, at Iowa State University, another 42 people were said to have tested positive for the virus for the week ending this past Monday. That included 27 students, 14 staff members, and one faculty member. A total of 133 people were said to be in quarantine after coming into close contact with someone who had tested positive for the virus. 16 of those 133 people who had been put into quarantine were said to have tested positive later. The Trib also reported on the latest coronavirus status in area school districts. The latest figures for the Ames School District showed fewer than 6 positive cases in the preschool, elementary school, middle school, and at Ames High. In the Ballard School District, fewer than 6 positive cases were reported. In Gilbert, 4 students were said to have tested positive. And in the Nevada and Roland Story School Districts, there were no current positive cases among students. And Tuesday's Trib also had a startling story about a dog. A pregnant, older black Labrador retriever had been dropped off at the Humane Society in Boone and lost every one of the 21 puppies she had been carrying. The mother dog was said to be in stable condition, and community members raised about $20,000 for her care. It was estimated the dog had been in labor for 24 hours before she was dropped off at the shelter. She was taken immediately to the Iowa State University College of Veterinary Medicine for care. She quickly went into labor and gave birth to 2 puppies. One was stillborn, the other died minutes after birth. All of the other puppies were either stillborn or too underdeveloped to survive. The average number of puppies per litter for Labrador retrievers is 7. The Boone Animal Shelter said it knows who the dog's owner is and said it would do what it can to file charges against the owner. Wednesday's Trib reported that another 23 coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county since the pandemic began to more than 4,000, 4,013 to be exact. There was also word that the Ames School Board had postponed action on whether to revise the local set of coronavirus metrics for the district. The school board met Monday night and talked about whether to increase the low-risk category from less than 5% to less than 8% positivity. The positivity percentage would influence how the district continues teaching this school year. District Superintendent Jenny Reisner said she would not want to put the district in a place where the metrics would tell the district to move all online, and as a result, students might not receive credit for the period they were all online. And the Trib reported that the Larson Well Company had opened a new facility in the Roland Industrial Park. That well company has been part of the Roland community for generations. It serves customers from Des Moines to Mason City and from Jefferson to Marshalltown. About 98% of the company's drilling work involves water wells, but it also offers geothermal well drilling. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, reported that 42 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 4,055. The county's 2-week positivity rate was 7.4%. The Trib also reported that everyone is being urged to take extra safety precautions this Halloween, in order to try to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The Centers for Disease Control says traditional trick-or-treating is a higher-risk Halloween activity. One way that trick-or-treating risk can be reduced is to individually wrap goodie bags and put them outside for kids to grab and go. As for when communities are holding their trick-or-treat nights, Maxwell's is tonight. Tomorrow night is the night designated by several communities, including Ames, Boone, Nevada, Gilbert, Cambridge, Collins, Colo, Huxley, Kelly, McCallsburg, Roland, Sheldahl, Slater, Story City, and Zeering. One traditional Halloween activity in Ames will not take place. The Ames Haunted Forest has been canceled because of the coronavirus. There was also word yesterday that the Ames City Council had selected a developer to build low-income housing on State Avenue. The council chose Prairie Fire Development to build the affordable housing at 321 State. The company will build 13 townhouses and a three-story building with 26 units. The Trib's website reported yesterday on the Iowa District 4 congressional race between Republican Randy Feenstra and Democrat J.D. Scholten. The race apparently is close. A recent Monmouth University poll showed Feenstra leading Scholten by 5 percentage points among high turnout likely voters. Feenstra had been leading by 21 points in August. Feenstra defeated longtime Republican incumbent Steve King in the Republican primary. Scholten lost to King in the general election 2 years ago. Feenstra and Scholten took part in only one televised debate, where they each tried to show themselves as the best choice for farmers, ethanol producers, and manufacturers in the district, which includes Ames. One more note from yesterday, and it's about something that takes place tonight and tomorrow. It's the Boone High School production of Dracula, starting at 7 o'clock each night. Audience members will be required to wear masks, and every other row will be blocked off in the auditorium. Cast members have been wearing masks during their rehearsals. And among the stories you'll see in today's Trib, the latest numbers on the coronavirus pandemic in Story County. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, hoping you have a happy and safe Halloween, and reminding you to turn your clocks back 1 hour this weekend, because daylight saving time ends early Sunday morning. And please, don't forget to come right back here on Monday, when I'll have word on what's been making news around Iowa. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the week in the news with the music interlude by the Rakers, Elephant Revival. So now let's welcome Mario Coffin, a civic leader in the Ames community. Hello, Mario.
Hello, Pat.
So recently, the University of Iowa has been sued by 10 athletes claiming racial discrimination. Mario, are you following that situation, or could you frame that for us, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So this past summer, after all the civil unrest, everything that happened with George Floyd, the Breonna Taylor situation, Ahmaud Arbery, there was about 20 former University of Iowa players that made light that their strength and conditioning coach, Chris Doyle, who was relieved of his position, the son of Kirk Ferentz, I can't remember his first name, and then the actual coach set up a culture in their locker room where the black players didn't feel like they belonged. They felt like they had to capitulate to the Iowa way of doing things, as if just being themselves wasn't enough. So they got an attorney, and then they just laid out a lawsuit. They're suing the university for $20 million right now for, I guess pain and suffering, and then for discrimination towards University of Iowa players. And players like Akram Wadley, who was like an All-American in Iowa, James Daniels, who was the second-round draft pick in the NFL, and a few other guys. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's about 20 players, and they're looking at they've already hired an attorney, and just last week the attorney sent the paperwork to the University of Iowa. The University of Iowa said so far that they're not going to pay anybody out just yet. So looks like this is going to trial.
Yeah, I think a couple of those details you mentioned was the offensive coach, Brian Ferentz, and the payment to the weight coach, Chris Doyle, $1.3 million. Does that kind of indicate some kind of admission that this was unfolding?
Actually, I think they gave him $800,000 to leave. They gave him 5 months severance, but he was making $1.1 million a year as a strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah. So the case is going to move forward now, apparently. I read where all the players had been athletes at University of Iowa after 2014. So they're kind of keeping it in this, what I would guess, relevant era in a time frame.
Yes.
Well, I'm curious of how this may relate to a situation here at the Iowa State University Athletic Department. Are you aware of any lingering or smoldering issues?
You know, outside of Gene Chizik leaving us prematurely after two seasons that nobody was very happy with, I have not yet to hear anything negative about any coach. Paul Rhodes was really loved here. Our new coach, Campbell, everybody really likes him. So I haven't heard anything, and I'm in the community, and I have a lot of former teammates. Everybody seems to love the coaches here. They seem to be very fair and just.
Yeah, well, as it should be. So what is the next step for the University of Iowa, as you see it?
Well, two things should happen, but I don't know if they will. Because in these situations, the university normally likes to save face. So as you noticed, from my investigation, a lot of the players felt like the strength and conditioning coach was scapegoated. They fired him. They paid him off to make him seem like he was the worst one. When a lot of the players said that he's just a small part of the problem. The university has known about this. The athletic directors have known about this. Ferentz has known about this. And if they don't know, they should. Because when you're the head coach, you're like everybody's father, pretty much. Everybody reports to you. And then your other coaches, they're like your brothers. So when you hear football, you think of family. Because, you know, you strap on shoulder pads, helmets, and you go to war with each other. Football is a very Trojan-like sport. It's a very violent game, so you got to trust the man next to you. As a former football player, if I had a coach that was making me feel bad because I'm not from Iowa and I wear a do-rag or I wear my hat or I sag my pants, I'm culturally different, and they tell me that I have to conform to the Iowa way, I probably wouldn't be able to perform my best. I would feel marginalized. I would feel disenfranchised. So many other words I could throw here, but beyond an apology and beyond just firing people, they have to change their culture. Like, whether people actually want to face it or not, football is like 70% African-American. Basketball is about 80%. So I understand that Iowa football has a way, but when majority of your players are coming from the hood, they're coming from Chicago, Detroit, Florida, they go to the ghetto and get these guys and they say, hey, if you want to come to my school, you have to dress like us. You have to talk like this. That's crazy to me. That is crazy. Yeah, if parents can't at least just come out and say, hey, we were wrong. I don't know. I don't think the players really care about the money because a lot of these guys have gone on to have careers. I think they just want an apology and they just want Iowa to stand up and say, hey, this was wrong. We stand against racism. This will not happen again. And consequences will be swift. But I don't think Iowa's going to do that. So this is going to become really, really ugly.
Yeah, well, it has all the earmarks of that. I guess Coach Ferentz's 22-year career, I think possibly the longest tenured coach in the nation. You know, so, yeah, they have a program. But just how deep is this stain going to go? How would you approach recruiting in 2020 with something like this hanging over the program?
Ooh, well, I think Iowa is going to have a rough go at it. Like, I know they've already got some decommitments. My son is a high school football player at Johnston. He has aspirations to play college football. Right now, at this moment, I would not send my son there. I'm a black man, and I feel that my son, whatever his culture is, whoever he identifies as, he should be that wherever he is. So if Iowa is telling young men that you have to look like us and talk like us and be like us, I don't know how many people want to come there. Like, this could probably sink the Iowa football team for years to come, similar to what happened to SMU when they got caught paying players under the table. I don't think they're going to get a necessary death penalty, quote unquote, like SMU, but the NCAA eventually will get involved with this because they kind of stayed out of it and they let Iowa take care of it in-house for the most part. I believe Iowa hired a firm to do an investigation. But that's about it so far. So no one's came out firm and said, we were wrong. As soon as that happens, you can start your foundation there and go forward. But they're just going to fight this and be stubborn. So if... Yeah. I'm a young black athlete and I'm looking at this, I would avoid the University of Iowa until I feel more comfortable with the situation that it's safe for me to be there. Because when you're a coach, you come into a young man's home and you promise him the world. You tell his parents, I'm going to take him from your home and I'm going to take care of you. And I'm going to love him like he's mine. I'm going to try to keep his nose clean. I'm going to do everything I can to help him become the best man he's able to be. This is what they tell you when they come into your living room. I've been through it before. Okay. So to take a kid far from home and then treat him like an outsider and strip him of his dignity and his pride and tell him who he is isn't good enough and he needs to be more like you, that's insanity to me. So until they're able to just stand on their 10 toes and say, hey, we're wrong. Coach Doyle was wrong. Kurt Ferentz is wrong. Or Ferentz might get fired if he doesn't. Yeah. Which... I know he's a very popular coach. I have mad respect for him, though I'm a, you know, go State, go Clones. I have mad respect for this man. Right now, my respect isn't the same. I understand people make mistakes. And for the longest time, this has been going on and people were afraid to come out and speak on it because they didn't want to lose their scholarships. Because like I said, a lot of these athletes, they come from impoverished situations, so they can't afford school without that scholarship. So they were afraid.
Yeah.
No one should be afraid to live their truth. No one should be afraid to be themselves at all. So if University of Iowa come off that high horse a little bit and just accept responsibility, a few more years, they might start getting those recruits again. A lot of guys will still come to Iowa because they breed offensive linemen, they breed corners, they breed defensive linemen. A lot of guys will still come there just for the look. But those young men, like, I question their character if they do. Because what do you stand for? If you see this going on and you still want to go there and represent that university as a man of color, knowing this is what might happen to you too. So That's where I'm at. Like, I know I just rambled on and I didn't give a clear and concise answer, but at this point, nothing is clear and concise in this situation. It's all very confusing and it's hurtful.
Well, I guess it kind of comes down to why is football important and how is it that it monetizes a university priority list? I mean, it seems like.
Don't get me started there, Pat. I wrote an article when I was at DMAC. And it was titled that college sports are one step below organized crime.
Oh, well, okay.
Seriously. Well, because if you think about it, everybody makes money, but the players on the field. These young men give their blood, sweat, and tears. If you're a football player, you have practice 4 or 5 days a week. Then you have a game. Then you have to do your homework so you can stay eligible. And you get beat up. If you blow out your knee, they can actually take your scholarship away from you. If you have an athletic scholarship, because the scholarship is essentially a contract. Yeah. You're contractually obligated to go out and play football, and I'll give you a scholarship. Even if you don't have the grades, if you can play football and you keep a C average, you can play. I'm going to use your likeness and make money. I'm going to use your jersey number. I'm going to make you like the Heisman Trophy winner. It's posted everywhere. Yeah. That's like $9 billion. That is made just off TV deals. We're not even talking about concessions. Yeah. We're not talking about merchandise. We're just talking about the TV deals that they have, like CBS and Fox. And these universities are padding their pockets. The winner, I believe the winner of the Rose Bowl will get $10 million, that school, and the loser will get $7 million. There's a lot of money being passed around school, and the players see none. And if a player so much as get a free tattoo in exchange, like an autograph, they'll lose their eligibility. Organized crime. So you can make money off of me beating my body up, but I can't make money off myself. So college sports, man,
we got a few more minutes. Big game coming up this weekend. How do you feel about the Cyclones and going up against Kansas?
I like our chances. Kansas, they're trying to find themselves. Dude, Kansas is a basketball powerhouse. Football hasn't really been their thing, but they did get Les Miles from LSU. They're a good football team, but this is a bounce back game for Iowa State. I expect Breece Hall to run all over that defense and Brocktober to throw a party. Brock Purdy normally doesn't lose in October, so I expect him to bounce back from last week and have a big game. I expect the Cyclones to win big by at least 3 touchdowns or more.
Well, interesting enough. Looks like the weather's going to be beautiful. Hope you have a great weekend, Mario. Thanks for being included on Local Talk.
Love you guys, man. I love KHOI.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Mario. Can we do our phonology on the rough-legged Hawks?
Phonology is the recording of nature's happenings when they occur. The first woodland hepatica blooming in the spring, or the last osprey of autumn, are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's focus on phonology is the return of rough-legged hawks. Rough-legged hawks migrate to Iowa this time of year from their far north country nesting areas. In the Arctic, there is an absence of trees, so these birds nest on the ground or atop a pile of rocks. The rough-legged hawks spend the summer capturing lemmings on the Arctic tundra, tending a cliffside nest under a sun that never sets. The rough-legged hawk gains its common name from its distinctive feathered legs. Winter is the time to see this large open country hawk in the U.S., where it may be perched on a fence post or hovering over a marsh or pasture on the hunt for small rodents. Often they can be seen perching on roadside fence posts. Similar to our resident red-tailed hawks, a rough-legged wingspan is about 4 feet, and they are about 21 inches in length. In general, these birds have darker backs, a light-colored head and breast, with some dark streaking and a dark belly, whereas the red-tailed hawk quite often has a white belly with a belly band. The tail of the rough-legged hawk is broad and long with a dark tip and a white base. The wings are long and broad and have pale flight feathers with dark tips. There is a dark patch near the center or wrist of the wing. This species occurs in both light and dark forms. They can be almost white or almost black. While in Iowa, much of the diet of the rough-legged hawk consists of birds and rodents such as voles and mice, though it will also prey upon other small mammals like rabbits. This hawk hunts by hovering over the ground while searching out prey with its keen eyesight, dropping or swooping onto their prey. To recap, this is the time of year that we start to see rough-legged hawks. While similar in appearance to our resident red-tailed hawks, rough-legged hawks have, 1, feathers on their legs to their talons, and 2, they often hunt by hovering, and 3, a white patch at the base of their tail feathers, and 4, dark patches on underside of wing at the wrist or elbow joint. These birds bring a bit of the Arctic to Iowa each winter, and that's our rough-legged hawk phenology for today. Phenologies are funded by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County. Check out their website for this great local environmental organization at oasco.org. And this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
Without the little barley
cool. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio on Local Talk. This is our COVID-19 response, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. And in our quest to strengthen our community through communication, let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames, and Aaron Rossiker, Communications Specialist with Iowa State University's Office of Strategic Relations and Communication. But in a few moments, but Susan, do you have any updates for the citizens?
Sure, Pat. Just a couple of things. You mentioned the weather should be nice this weekend. Just a reminder that the first no-charge yard waste day will be from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Green RU, which is 400 Friel Drive. You can dispose of your leaves this weekend at no charge at the site. Also, the official recommended hours for trick-or-treating or Bagger's Night in Ames is 5:30 to 7:30, also on Saturday. So busy weekend. And as we get into next week, just a reminder that the town budget meeting, which is the meeting that kicks off the budgeting process for the City of Ames, that will be held at 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 5th. And that will be a Zoom meeting facilitated by City Manager Steve Shanker. It is a participatory meeting in that people call in. There is a brief presentation by our finance director. I guess you Zoom in or call in. And you can give your comments about budgets, about financial direction, just learn a little bit about how money's allocated and projections for next year. It's a good meeting. It's usually a brief meeting, around an hour. And it really is how the people who attend it make it. They kind of shape it and indicate the direction that we go in. So it's an important way to get your voice heard if you have concerns about city finances or have thought about a program or project you thought the city should pursue. Take advantage of that opportunity to get involved.
Well, I like the tone of your take advantage of these technological marvels, this Zoom option of communicating. Do you feel like we're into this pretty deep? Is the Zoom sort of outreach working for the city council and for your city business?
I'm a little on the fence on that. I think it opens up avenues to participate for people who maybe can't physically make it to the meeting. And I think that's great.
Good
but
point.
I also feel like in some senses it's intimidating to other people who are not entirely comfortable with the new technology. So
yeah.
I don't know. We've never done a budget meeting by Zoom before, and it is directed by the people who come to it. So it could be really, really short if we don't get anybody to attend. It's a really great overlook of city finances and how things are funded. Dwayne Pitcher gives that overview each year, and it's just excellent.
Yeah, good to know. Thank you for that perspective. Because better or worse, it seems like this is the system. So I hope people take advantage of these opportunities for growth and development.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're changing all the time. Well, let's welcome Erin Rossiker.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Your area with community support that includes cyclone care, could we start there?
Sure, yeah. Go ahead, yeah, Susan, Pat, did you want to say something?
Sure, Pat, I thought it would be great to have Erin back again. A couple of months ago, Erin and I were on together sort of talking about Iowa State, and Erin's team had just launched Cyclones Care, which is a public education campaign around, focused on the four healthy behaviors, the four healthy pillars of behavior around keeping safe during a pandemic. And the city was one of the organizations community-wide that was sort of getting on board. But the university has been the leader in creating this campaign and has been generous enough to share it with the rest of the community in order to maintain a consistent message from campus to community about community expectations during the pandemic for behavior. And we're really excited in the sense that we've never had a community campaign like this before, although we're saddened that it's a pandemic that is causing us to work together in these ways. We are trying to make the best of really a dire situation and something that we all, I think, are kind of hoping will end soon. But I mean, I can't say enough good things about the university and their leadership on this, and then their ability to share this campaign really with anybody that has an interest in participating.
All right, checks in the mail. Thank you, Susan, for saying nice things.
Yeah, that was beautiful, yes. But it is. She speaks from the heart.
Well, it's a natural partnership. I mean, you know, we really rallied to all take on a campaign that we hadn't planned on. And if you know anything about public relations and marketing, which I've learned a lot more about during this process, this happened at warp speed and really happened very quickly and with a lot of uncertainty in the future, not knowing when, you know, we all thought maybe by summer this would be over. And, you know, now we're looking at who knows how long. So, yeah. It just seemed smart to share, to not make our partners reinvent the wheel that's already there for their use. And then what we had created for a large population on campus is also a large population in Ames and the area. So why wouldn't we want them to see the same healthy behavior messaging, whether they're on campus or off? Because it's not just on campus that we want folks to be wearing their face coverings and physical distancing and washing their hands off. And we want them to practice that off campus as well. So, and it went as far, I mean, we got the county involved. So you'll see Cyclones Care beyond, you know, the Ames city limits as well, which is nice.
Yes, it is.
We have a lot of, you know, faculty and staff that live in the area. We have students who come in from the area that, you know, drive into class or whatever. So it's just smart behaviors no matter what.
We saw a big push when students got back to campus. A lot of students stay in Ames year round, but there were a lot of newcomers coming in. And so Cyclones Care came out strong at the beginning of the year. As you know, Iowa State has adjusted its calendar. So we're looking at a compressed fall semester. And Erin, maybe you can talk a little bit about the timeline. So now we're getting into the season where the semester is actually just a couple of weeks away from finishing, and the campaign will have to kind of go dark for a while and then a whole new push when they come back.
Right. So we're kind of turning our attention to how to educate the students, especially when they leave to go home. It's also cold and flu season. So we are doing some campaign, just some more informal language on it, but we're pushing the same four behaviors, and we're going to start educating them on how to return if they're leaving Ames and the campus, to how they return home safely. Try not to take hopefully they're just bringing their dirty laundry home and not a bunch of germs, right? So, and that's not just COVID we're talking about. The behaviors that we're pushing are also sensible behaviors for cold and flu season as well, which is on top of the pandemic. We'll shift to that messaging in November, the last day of school. They'll take their last finals on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So hopefully for the couple weeks beforehand, they're really being even more mindful of their behaviors and, you know, turning down offers to go places that they're just practicing more stringent behavior, you know, watching what they do even more closely. So maybe instead of going out to eat or whatever, they'll pick it up and bring it home, things like that, that will lessen their exposure chances and taking something with them home.
I think everybody probably remembers that those last couple of weeks in school where everybody seems to get sick, you're worn down, you're tired. Yep. I think the reminders to kind of limit your bubble and not take anything home with you that your grandma or your parents aren't ready for is just a really good message, because this is just a time of year where people are tired and they seem to be more susceptible to, like Aaron said, all illnesses, colds, flus, bugs. And we just want people to be safe or to practice safer behaviors and try to limit their exposure. And those, Iowa State is actually off for 2 months. They don't come back. I think it's till January 25th.
Right. Yep. So we will have a winter session, 5-week session, but it's online only. So students can take one class, up to 4 credit hours. There's a limited amount of classes they can take, but it's online, so they can do that from home and keep progressing towards that degree completion. But yeah, we'll be open, but we just won't have folks on campus like normal.
And then come January, we kind of start it all up again, kind of.
Right, right. So
crank up the machinery and start pumping
bring them
it
back.
Out.
Yep. So really the whole campaign has been based on healthy habits, establishing habits that are natural. So when you walk out the door, maybe your face covering is hanging on the doorknob and you, so that you remember to take it with you, or you always keep one in your bag. So that's what we've been really pushing, is, you know, how to get these habits in your life so that it's not a burden and that you can help protect your community and yourself from getting sick.
Aaron, it seemed that a few weeks ago at the start of the football season, there was a lot of emphasis put on whether the fans would be welcomed, and initially they kept things pretty well tightened down without the fans. And then a few games into it, they started to have limited fan activities at the games. Of course, tailgating was ruled out. And I guess in the new world order of how we're proceeding, how did it go after the fans were a limited number of fans were readmitted to the games?
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm not in on that part of it. I really just am focused on this campaign and getting the materials out and the other part of my job. But it seemed like a success. I watched the games.
Yeah. Well,
and I will say that we watch a lot of football in my house, and I'm really impressed with the Iowa State fans. I would say, you see, you know, Georgia or somebody else on TV, their fans, I see more non-masked people at the games, whereas the compliance at the Iowa State games was incredible and really made me happy, because we put a lot of work into the campaign itself, which I'm sure wasn't the motivating behavior. But, you know, Jamie Pollard said they're required, and so our fans are doing what they need to do to be able to be at the games.
I've had a lot of conversations with ISU Wellness, and they have done a lot of work in pushing out ways to safely have gatherings before football games. They post lists of activities that you can do that maintain distance, things like playing bags where you're naturally spaced out, individually wrapping food. Yeah. Iowa State does not allow tailgating at the games, and I think their approach of being gradual and sort of opening the gates slowly and looking for those compliance measures has been successful. And so, like Aaron said, they're pretty locked down, and they are eliminating some of those ways that you would have large crowds by suggesting alternatives that really appeal to everybody. So I got the list of healthy or safer tailgating, just like I have the list of safer Halloween activities. We don't guarantee that you are always going to be protected, but there are ways you can mitigate some of the risks. And so here are some tips or ways to do it. We live in a world where we have to take steps to make our lives safer and follow advice of the experts in the field. And so what I like from Iowa State is they're sort of a clearinghouse for that expertise. They kind of gather it up and package it, and then we can help promote it.
Our attention towards being healthy at the games, I guess none of us have really heard if there's been a spike or if there's been a problem. So I guess kind of let that sleeping dog lie. If they're able to compete in a safe way, and hopefully this too will be an accomplished season of not triggering a whole bunch of COVID-19 related illnesses.
Yeah, I know that we track those, the 14 day totals. We track our COVID rates all the time. And you do look for, if you're seeing a spike now, what happened 14 days ago? Yeah. And we are not being able to pinpoint specific events in time that may have created spikes. We are seeing a slight increase right now. There are lots of reasons that we might be seeing that. You have to look at the rolling total. So we'll keep watching it this week and into next week. We're seeing a statewide increase and we're seeing a national increase.
Yeah.
So we have to watch these numbers. And I think what we're seeing is we believe the four pillars of healthy behavior are working. We are seeing evidence that those things are helping curb the spread. So that's all you can hope for.
Uh-huh. And I would say, to add on that is, Ames is probably one of my, I'm super proud of my community for how they are participating, the community itself. I have a daughter in high school and she played volleyball and her team practiced and played every practice, every game. The whole team was masked on the court, off the court, everywhere. And they completed their season and I felt better about her participating. And that is not the case wherever we went. Our gym, everybody had to have face coverings on. So we are fortunate at Ames where we have a bigger facility than some of the smaller schools. And I was not as comfortable at some of the smaller schools where the fans weren't required to wear face masks. Yeah. They weren't required to distance. Ames has really bought in as a community itself, and that makes me feel good to be a part of this community.
Yeah, it does seem to all stem from start with the face mask. If you're willing to get those principles in the community, I love seeing the fashion statements on many of the face masks now, and I think we're just becoming more and more comfortable with the reality that a face mask is good policy, and then it helps you washing your hands and bolstering our immune systems. So it's and now that we're in the typical flu season, I'm hoping that it'll help in that regard. You sure wouldn't want to get the flu and get your resistance down and your immune system under stress and then be exposed to a little bit of COVID and one on top of the other, maybe.
Yeah, I think, Pat, you've got this great point. I mean, these are just good practices for all types of illnesses.
Thank you.
And the hand washing, we've been told that for years and years and years.
Sure.
Wash your hands.
Sure.
Stay physically distanced from people. It just makes sense. It's tough. I mean, I haven't really hugged my parents in a long time, but they're frail, and I don't want to be responsible for them getting sick.
Yeah.
And staying home if you're sick, that's a tough one too. I had to stay home a couple of weeks ago, but I kept saying, I just have a cold. But I didn't know because a lot of the symptoms are the same. So you need to be safe and you don't want to be responsible for bringing sickness to your workplace or to your home.
Yeah.
So we all are in this together and we're all going to get through it together. And it's the behavior of all of us that's going to determine the course of how long are we doing this.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, thanks for a great wrap up. There's Susan Guiasta, our public relations officer, and Aaron Rossiker. Thank you for the discussion this morning on how we can all benefit from how the cyclone care principles can influence our community. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Pat.
Anna Magnuson, Anna Banana, are you in the house?
I am, Pat. Great show.
But how are you?
Well, I learned a lot. I like it. I love listening and learning to local talk. So I just wanted to wish everyone a spooktacular weekend. And speaking of treats, thanks to Courtney Kirkpatrick, who works for Home Inc., was a guest on this week's Heart to Heart Messages show. She shared the recipe for making these mummy cookies with these three ingredients: Oreos, white candy melts, and black sparkle gel to create these great, delicious treats. And she also shared her favorite autumn dessert, which is an oatmeal pie. I had never heard of an oatmeal pie, but I'm going to make that this weekend. And then she did the added bonus: if you put cinnamon ice cream on it, it's absolutely delicious. So that's going to be my Halloween treat for the weekend. And also, I think I remember telling you that I've been participating in the 21-day equity challenge that the United Way of Central Iowa has been doing. And I would like to share their 20th day message, which is this: at one time or another in our journey, we might find ourselves hesitant to pursue change due to the fear of making mistakes. We invite you to view it as an opportunity to be brave. Let us all do what we can to create and inhabit the brave space described in this poem. Invitation to brave space. You are invited to be yourself in this brave space. Together, we will create brave space, because there is no such thing as a safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars, and we all have caused wounds. In this space, we seek to turn down the volume of the outside world. We call each other to more truth and love. We have the right to start somewhere and continue to grow. We have the responsibility to examine what we think we know. This space will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our brave space together, and we will work on it side by side. And that's by Mickey Scott Bay Jones. And so again, a shout out to the United Way of Central Iowa. I love that 21-day equity challenge, and hope everyone has a safe and happy Halloween weekend. So back to you, Pat.
Well, thank you, Anna Banana. Mario, you're still with us.
Yes, sir.
I hope you have great plans for this weekend. The blue moon of Halloween, a second full moon.
As if we need another one. Yes, I will tomorrow. So my daughter's coming today. It's my weekend, and we're going to decorate my store, Cricket Wireless, over by North Grand Mall. So I'm going to have a Halloween get together there. I'll have candy. I'm pretty sure there'll be spider webs all over the place. And I may even dress up. I'm thinking about being Uncle Phil this year. What do you think? Do I look like it?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I'm glad you're in the spirit.
Yeah, always.
Thank you, Mario. Local Talk special COVID-19 response program airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Fridays at KHOI. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button. The views of KHOI's guests do not necessarily reflect the views of KHOI. This is nonprofit, nonpartisan media. We do provide a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. KHOI is also streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Michael Murphy. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, producer
Mark
Rudenberg and Lynn Carey and Dennis Hart for your Friday report. And thank you, Mario Coffin. And thanks to our guests, Susan Wiazda, Aaron Rossiker. And thank you, listeners. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Anna Banana Magnuson.
Yes, and our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. So remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening, and
we'll see you on the radio.